Just coming. We haven't started yet. Just about to start. Yeah. Oh yeah. Before I forgot, these are the books I promise you. Yeah. You can have them. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is a Sunday, the 26th November 2017. We are having our 6 Paitriya Sutta class. Today is lesson 62. Yeah, correct, yeah? Lesson 62. So this series of sharing started in the year 2015, 14th of June. Yeah. Okay. You all ready? Let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadhana, then the spiritual zeal, virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Quan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Quan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Fo Pu Sa. Namo Fo Pu Sa. Namo Fo Pu Sa. Arahang sama sambuto bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. สุราเมรยามัจจาปมาดัทานะเวรามณีสิกขาปะทังสมาธิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุOkay, now we pay respect to Tripaja. Badang Pujayami. Damang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you can be seated.Just relax body and mind. Then we will continue with our sharing of this six page here, Black Palm Sutta. We are at this page 302. Okay, before we start, we will turn to page 1, where we will recite the opening verse.The opening verse for starting a sutta. Verse for opening a sutta. We recite together. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning.So this opening verse is very useful, very important. It's to remind cultivator of the importance of the Buddha Sasana when you are born in the era where the teaching are still around. That is called the Buddha Sasana, or in English, it's the Buddha's dispensation. So this type of teaching, like the sutta clearly mentioned, is very difficult to come by.That's why the opening verse is a very strong reminder to cultivator. You have the condition. You must pay attention, make full use of the condition, so that you plant the necessary Bodhi seed or Bodhi mind required for this understanding to be continuously with your form and mind when it arises. That's why we had here the unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma.It's difficult to encounter because the period between sasana and the period where there is no sasana can be very long. It can be hundreds of millions of kappas, of aeons. Aeons are a very long period of time. In Pali, it's called kappas. Then we have to determine, I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it.Therefore, I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning of the teaching. So when you can do this and make the appropriate aspiration or vow, then all this understanding will stay with you, life after life. Even without sasana, you will be able to develop the understanding of the teaching. Okay, now we turn to page 302. Maybe we turn back a bit. We turn back to page 301, the sutta part. The master said, what are your doubts? All living beings have two bodies. How you pronounce this? Zitao replied. The physical body and the Dhamma body.The physical body is impermanent and is produced and destroyed. The Dhamma body is permanent and is without knowing or awareness. The sutta said that the extinction of production and extinction is bliss. So this part is very useful. The sutta said that the extinction of production and extinction Yes, please. Yes. Okay. But I do not know which body is in tranquil extinction and which receives the bliss. How could it be the physical body which receives the bliss? When this physical body is extinguished, the four elements scatter. That is total suffering, and suffering cannot be called bliss. If the Dhamma body were extinguished, it would become like grass, tree, towels, and stone. Then, what would receive this bliss? Moreover, the Dhamma nature is the substance of production and extinction, and the five heaps or the five aggregates are the function of production and extinction. With one body having five functions, production and extinction are permanent. At the time of production, the function arises from this substance. And at the time of extinction, the function returns to the substance. If there were rebirth, then sentient being would not cease to exist or be extinguished. If there were no rebirth, they would return to tranquil extinction and be just like insentient objects. Thus all dhammas would be suppressed by nibbana or nirvana, and there would not even be production. How could there be bliss? Then the master said, you are a son of Sakya, means lineage of Sakyamuni Buddha. How can you hold the deviant views of annihilism and permanence, which belongs to other religion, and criticize the supreme vehicle Dhamma? According to what you say, there is a Dhamma body that exists apart from physical form, and a tranquil extinction to be sought apart from production and extinction. Moreover, you propose that there is a body which enjoys the permanent and bliss of Nibbana, but that is to grasp tightly out to birth and death and indulge in worldly bliss. So this is the explanation of Master Huineng to this particular monk or bhikkhu. I think his name is Zi Dao. Okay. So this Mandarin word sometimes not easy. I English educated. Sometimes I pronounce it wrongly. So not so nice. So I better ask those who know Mandarin, because they have with them the actual Mandarin version. So you read the Mandarin version, you should understand. Okay. The first part of the sutta is very useful. The master asks him, what are your doubts? So Sutta replied, all living being has two bodies, the physical body and the Dhamma body. So these two is correct. But he doesn't understand what these two bodies are. So now I explain this to you so that you understand. So according to Huineng, all living beings means not only human beings, all living beings. Has two bodies. And you are familiar, these two bodies are the physical body and the Dhamma body. This This is the part that a lot of cultivators couldn't understand. They got themselves trapped when they don't understand. So physical body, as you can see, each and every one of us, we have a physical body. And we have a consciousness that is trapped inside since birth because of karmic. So this one is karmically conditioned. If it's karmically conditioned, then it is not your true body. This is not permanent, because this is condition arising, causal phenomenon. Because of condition, it arises. So you have to understand, this one is impermanent, lead to suffering. That's why the Buddha said it's anatta, non-self, empty nature. And this is not you. So this is not the real one. So this is called the you can use the word fake. Fake body. Because this is not really you. You understand? Whereas the Dhamma body is also not you. But there is a nature. So this Dhamma body is the unconditioned. Means it is the original nature. It is already there. It is never born. Then from there, everything arises. That is the difficult part. That's why cultivator cannot comprehend, cannot understand. And that's where they get into delusion, misunderstanding. Then they cling onto this, thinking that they can become enlightened, they can realize this. Then they can enjoy the bliss and all those things. There is no such thing. But what is important is the connection between these two. The aspect of the teaching that cultivators do not understand is this physical body, which is karmically conditioned, is subject to karma. This one is subject to law of karma. So this one, even though it's not you, you have to understand that it is subject to the law of karma. That's why when you come to this world, existential world, any of the 31 planes, not necessarily a human being, this karmically conditioned physical body and mind, or they call it the five aggregate of form and mind, even though not you, because it's impermanent, lead to suffering, empty, non-self. But you have to take care, because this is subject to karma. This one recognizes relationship. Subject to karma and recognizes relationship. Sorry, the spelling is wrong. Recognizes relationship. So this one, you cannot just use the ultimate truth or logic or science and simply do things. You cannot, because there is karmic consequence. Then this one recognizes relationship. Means there is such thing as father, mother, human being, brother, sister, neighbors, fellow living beings. You cannot ignore this fact, because this is what the law of karma is all about. even though it is not real, not you, but it recognizes tangible condition or relationship. There is such thing as a human being, a living being. Within the conditioned world, there is such thing as old age, sickness and death, birth and all those things. The Dhamma, the teaching, they exist within the conditioned world. Yeah. And because they exist, you must understand the conditioned Dhamma means must understand the mundane or conditioned Dhamma. Oh, sorry. Understand. Must understand the mundane or conditioned Dhamma. If you don't understand this conditioned Dhamma, you cannot live life. You will get yourself into trouble. You will be entangled by the law of karma. Then this form and mind, every time you come, will be in trouble. Because the Buddha, through his aeons and aeons of cultivation and perfection, came to know this very powerful truth. He said, all living beings, not only human beings, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So you have to take care of karma. So this part is most important. Yeah? But this one is not the real one. This one is just a vehicle and a tool for you to come to this world. So for you to come to this world, you need a vehicle and a tool. Yeah? So this one is a vehicle and tool for you to come to this world. Vehicle is just like a car. If you want to go somewhere, the car will take you around there. So your physical body is like your car. It's like a vehicle to take you around. But the tool is the consciousness or the mind that is trapped inside. That is the one you can say is the driver. That's why the Buddha say is the forerunner of all things. Yeah. When mind arises, everything arises. So that driver is a tool for you to use. If you use it appropriately, then it serves you well. But if you use it wrongly, through wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, then it creates suffering and misery, not only to you, also out to others. And because of that, the law of karma, when it manifests, you will reap the friction of what you do. So when you use it wrongly, deludedly, foolishly, it's just like the best analogy is a knife. Yeah? A knife, you use it for cutting fruit, shaping vegetable, crafting and all those things. Yeah. Cut vegetable, cut fruits, shape whatever you want to shape. Yeah? And help you to do whatever function that it is designed for. So that is called using that tool with understanding appropriately. But if you don't have the understanding and you use it wrongly, means you use this knife to cut people, to harm people, to hurt people, to hit out at people, or to cut yourself, harm yourself, and hurt yourself. That is a wrong way of using that tool. So your thought is the same. If you use it wrongly, you will arise the wrong thought to make yourself miserable, suffer, full of suffering, misery, sorrow, lamentation. Sometimes people become depressive. So they go into depression. Then they become so full of unhappiness, like remorse, envy, jealousy, hatred. Then they sometimes get angry, hit out at others, want to take revenge. Then they plot, they plan, they deceive. That's how war come about, misunderstanding come about. Fighting. Then also a lot of negative mind state arise. So all this is the result of delusion. When you don't understand what this is, a vehicle that do for you to come to this world, to experience life, to live life, to go through all your karmic friction and all those things. If you cannot understand this mundane Dhamma or conditioned Dhamma, then you don't know how to use this form and mind, then karmically you will get into trouble. You will fall. And this is what the teaching by the Buddha is all about. For you to understand that this is not you, but this is subject to karma, recognizes relationship, means as a human being or living being, you have to do your duty. You have to plant the seed of wholesomeness. Law of karma recognizes relationship. Whatever condition you plant, the friction will follow. So you plant the seed of evil, karmic negativity, you will receive the friction of it, which is evil and karmic negativity. Whatever you do to people, people will do back to you. You reap what you sow. Do good because goodness. Do evil because evil. So this part have to understand it clearly. Then the second aspect is the Dhamma body. This one is the unconditioned. Unconditioned means there is such thing as the unconditioned Dhamma. So this unconditioned Dhamma is what the teaching for enlightenment is all about. The Buddha's teaching, he taught you to develop this Dhamma understanding so that you can understand the unconditioned Dhamma. And within the unconditioned Dhamma, the Buddha said, there is no such thing as birth, old age, sickness and death. No such thing as the Four Noble Truths, the law of karma and all those things. All this doesn't exist. When you have this understanding of the unconditioned Dhamma, then you are not deluded by the conditioned Dhamma. That's how the fifth Paitya, when he spoke to Hui Ning, when he reached the part, he said, this mind means this tool, this mind, you have to learn how to use it, and yet you are not affected by it. That is how Hui Ning came to great awakening. But that is to tell him that within the unconditioned Dhamma, there is no such thing. But even though there is no such thing, but within the conditioned world, the conditioned Dhamma, there is this law of karma. There is all this duty that you have to perform as a human being or a living being. So that you can take care of karma, and each and every time this karmically conditioned form and mind come to this world, it will have the good karmic inheritance to protect it, to take care of it. Then when you are here, you must also have the understanding of the unconditioned Dhamma. These two, you must develop the understanding. So this one and this one, you must combine it, so that you are not deluded by the conditioned world or the phenomenal world. So you use it to live life, to do your duty, perform everything, but you are not deluded by it. Means anything were to happen to this form and mind, you are not deluded because you are not attached, you are not cling, you are not worried. Even like your own physical body, you will not worry about it getting old, getting sick and die, because this is not you. And because it is not you, it will go the way of nature. condition like that, things will be like that. So when you have that understanding, you can be at peace. You will know how to endure, and you will know how to confront and liberate the mind. So the mind that is beyond the conditioned Dhamma will realize the unconditioned Dhamma. Then it will realize the true mind. And this true mind, when it has the ability to come forth, to help the form and mind to understand all this, that is what we call Dhamma understanding, or wisdom, born of the true mind. When the true mind see things as they are, via the direct seeing, and awaken, then it develops what we call wisdom. So when there is this wisdom, it will lead to enlightenment. Then it will lead to the unconditioned Dhamma, understanding of it. So when you have this understanding, you become very different. Everything is just the way it is, clearly understood. The phenomenal world is not what you think. It's a world of consciousness, dependent originating, condition arising. There is no reality behind. There is no such thing as a permanent unchanging entity behind. That's the reason why Hui Ning told this monk, Fa Zi, Zi Fa, Zi Da, sorry. Confused, Zi Da. Okay, thank you for correcting me. Zi Da don't understand. Because he asked, he said, the physical body is impermanent and is produced and destroyed. The Dhamma body is permanent and is without knowing or awareness. Then he said, the sutta said that the extinction of production and the extinction is bliss. He cannot understand this. No? Yeah? You can understand the first part or not. The extinction of production and the extinction is bliss. Yes. This particular monk, he cannot understand that part. You see, this is called the conditioned Dhamma, okay? Conditioned Dhamma, where it's within the conditioned world, the physical body, the form and mind, okay? So when production means arising and passing away, understand or not? Where it arises, that's why it's produced, then it passes away. Well, this is what the conditioned world is all about. When condition is there, it will arise. Yeah. So this part, this monk cannot understand. So he told Hui Ning, he said, the physical body is impermanent, that one he got it right, and is produced and destroyed. Okay, dependent, originating, condition arising. Then the Dhamma body is permanent. He got it wrong. The Dhamma body is not permanent. The Dhamma body is the unconditioned. But it doesn't belong to you. That's where he went wrong. And without knowing or awareness, that part is correct. Then the sutta said that the extinction of production means when there is no more condition for anything to arise, what happened? Then extinction is? That is what? Cessation, which is the realization of Nibbana. And this one is the teaching. But this monk cannot understand. Then he used it wrongly. But I do not know which body is in tranquil extinction and which one receives bliss. See? He becomes so foolish. He was trying to ask. He said, these two bodies, he said, which one experience extinction and which one experience bliss? And now I ask you, what is your understanding? Both also don't belong to you, understand or not? So the question is irrelevant. That's why later on he reprimanded this monk. What did he tell this monk? You turn the next page, 302, at the end. The master said what? The last paragraph of the sutta. You are a son of Sakya, means what? You follow Sakyamuni Buddha's lineage, understand or not? Means you are his disciple, son of Sakya. How can you hold the deviant view of annihilation and permanence? You understand? This is what all the other teaching teach. After you die, everything is gone. Annihilation. Yeah? Then, after you become enlightened, what happened? There is this permanent enjoyment of maybe eternal heaven and all those things. So he said these are deviant views of annihilism and permanence which belong to other religion, and you use that to criticize the supreme vehicle. So now you understand. Huh? Can follow or not this one? Cannot follow. Cannot follow. Wait till later the commentary. I also haven't read. We read through, we see what Sun Hua say. Then maybe there is condition to explain to you clearer. But it's quite easy, right, after I explain. The main thing you have to understand is these two are also not you, understand not? That's why his delusion comes from. He say, which body experience eternal bliss? And which body experience the extinction? So this is the thought trying to know. The thought want to know, understand? That's why he got doubt. He want to ask Hui Ning, Master Hui Ning. It's just like sometimes certain Kayanamita, after they go through certain experience, Rati, what is this? Then they use their own thought and say, which one experience bliss and which one experience extinction? If I also gullible, I will answer him, this one experience bliss, this one experience extinction. Then I also become equally gullible, understand? Well, there is no such thing. Then after that, the sutta continues it. According to what you say, means there is a Dhamma body that exists apart from physical form, and a tranquil extinction to be sorted apart from production and extinction. Moreover, you propose that there is a body that enjoys and which enjoys the permanent and bliss of Nibbana, but that is to grasp tightly into birth and death and indulge in worldly bliss. So a lot of cultivators don't understand. Because they thought, as a human being, I strive very hard, I cultivate, I meditate to realize what? Enlightenment is there. But finally, when they realize the real enlightenment, not the fake one, they realize that form and mind is not him. And there is no one to be enlightened, no one to attain. This is the true realization of enlightened being. And it's very beautiful. That being, the form and mind, that realize that is beautiful. But the problem is, the non-enlightened one, they use thought and go and reason. Then they will tell you, Brother, you meditate for what? No one to be enlightened. You understand? Because they don't know the secret of life. The secret of life is to understand both the conditioned Dhamma or mundane Dhamma and the supramundane or unconditioned Dhamma. So this one, another word for it is the supramundane Dhamma. Means beyond the mundane. So this mundane and supramundane Dhamma, they are one pair. You have to have both understanding in order for you to understand life and truly live life. That's why the Heart Sutta mentioned this. In true emptiness, there is wonderful existence. That is the meaning. When you penetrate true emptiness, you realize the unconditioned, the supramundane Dhamma. And together with the conditioned Dhamma, which you already understood before the enlightenment, then life becomes wonderful. Then you know how to live life. That form and mind become beautiful. No more suffering, no more delusion. Then it can just accord and flow. And develop all the understanding through the cultivation of the Bodhisattva way, that they can keep on coming, keep on returning to another form of mind. And every life they come, they have this understanding. That's why Bodhisattva are great beings who have this wonderful understanding, and they can really be a blessing to all. And this is what the Mahayana tradition is all about. So if you have developed the understanding, then you will know how to cultivate, and you will know how to develop the understanding accordingly. Yeah. Of course, if you ask the unenlightened one, they will want the fast one. They say, "Well, Theo, I'm contented with the sainthood way, even can be a sotapan, guarantee enlightenment way, maximum 7 life." So that type of craving to just become enlightened, nothing wrong, understand or not? But when you hold on to that type of views, that type of opinion, there is a limitation. You are limited by what your thought tells you. So you can strive very hard, then later on maybe there is condition, and you realize the sainthood way, and finally become arahant and cease. So as an analogy in our maybe current civilization is like if you go to school, you study, there is a lot of education that you can go through. But if you choose to stop at standard 6 or form 3, it's up to you, understand not? The same way is like form 6, standard 6 to form 3. After you clear form 3, you can maybe become arahant. Or maybe form 5, you can become arahant. Then from standard 6 onward, maybe the first stage, second stage, third stage, all. But your limitation of education, training up to form 5, even though you can free your mind, but it is limited, as you understand, because there are further studies that you can can go through, like form 6, then you can go to university, you study the undergraduate course, then after you finish, you can do your master, your PhD and all those things, then you can specialize, and you can do a lot more things. So that one, if you are not able to develop the enlightenment and the understanding, you use the mundane mind, the thought, to make a decision, then you can get yourself entangled. That's the reason why I always say, don't try to know, just do. Just cultivate. Have faith, sincerity, and persevere. Then by the time the understanding comes, you will be different. You will understand what this thing is. Then this form of mind has a choice as to what is useful, what is important, so that all this understanding can be developed. Yeah. And when all this understanding unfolds, you become different. That's why they call it the supreme vehicle. You saw the word or not? Yeah? Supreme vehicle. Because there are 4 stages. Okay. With that, maybe we continue with our commentaries. We see what Xuan Hua got to say. Page 302, last paragraph. Commentary. Is it the physical body which is extinct, and the Dhamma body which received the bliss? Sutta wanted to know. So if you are equally gullible, you will be using your thought thinking. Which is the one? Is it the physical body which is extinct, and the Dhamma body which received the bliss? So this monk wants to know. Or is it the other way around? The Dhamma body which is extinct, and the physical body which received the bliss. How could it be the physical body which received the bliss? The body is composed of elements. You can follow, this one. The 4 elements. Earth element, wind element, water element, and fire element. At death, the element disperses or scatters, and there is a state of unspeakable suffering. You know why is it suffering or not? How many of you understand death? Huh? You all haven't died before, so nobody understands death. So what is this word, death? When a person dies, what happens? Yeah? What happens? Of course, for us, we summarize things very easy. Separation of consciousness from the form. So just one sentence, finish, yeah? The consciousness come out. But you remember last Thursday class, I told you where I went through the death process when I was very young. I think about 9 or 10 years old. There is this craving force that binds your consciousness to this physical body. Yeah. And this craving force will start to dissipate now. Yeah. Start to dissipate. But I was very lucky because past life cultivated. And I was in the state of perfect mindfulness now. When that thing happened, I didn't know what mindfulness is also. I at that time haven't meditated, don't even know the Dhamma. But then when it happened, how can my mind be in that state? That's why this one will know it will never die like a normal being. Because even that time, I was so young without the Dhamma, without any understanding. My true nature, true mind, the awareness, can be there to see all this happening. That's how my consciousness come out. And that time, because when it happened, my physical body was still in the alive state, means all the organ is still functioning. Except I was very tired. Because I went out and play until I was so tired, until there was no more physical energy to even hold my consciousness inside this body. So the craving force which need energy also dissipate. But when it dissipates, my clear mind, true mind, the awareness is aware of the whole process. How all this craving force dissipate? Yeah. Then if you were to read the book, Tibetan Book of Death, it's mentioned inside there. He said when you are about to die, especially if you are not a cultivator, you don't have the Dhamma and the understanding, you know what is happening. At the moment of death, this craving force will cease. But you are not aware because you don't have the awareness. But your mundane consciousness is still inside there. It hasn't come out. Then you don't know what is happening. But when that process happens, do you know what happened or not? First thing is your breath stops. You know why your breath stops? Your karmic force, no more. Understand? Your heartbeat, the doctor say you are dead, medically dead. Means there is no more heartbeat, no more blood sent to your brain. So your brain also cut off. Then your consciousness that is inside there, without the brain to help you, you really don't understand what is going on. Then most of you, because of karmic, there is intense fear. The karmic will take over. That's why you become like not aware. You are not that form of mind anymore. That's why in Mandarin or Chinese, we used to have this word. Before you die, your character change. You heard of it? Lao huan xiong. Huan xiong. You become like crazy, simply say things already. Then sometimes you say you can see people who died already on your relative and all those things. That is the reason why when your consciousness has become so low, your aura has become so weak, your frequency match the frequency of the non-human. Do you understand? That's why you can see them. That's why when they are saying all those things, it's in their unconscious state. It's not themselves anymore. It's the manifestation of karmic force. But if you have good karma, like last night, Auntie Tan, you remember? In that state, she was not herself, but she keep on telling people who visited her in the hospital, she is going there for Katina, going there for Katina, because she has this very strong Katina habitual tendency that she do a lot. Yeah. So the last thought moment is always conditioned by your habitual tendency, things that you do frequently, yeah, good or bad. So when these things happen, it will manifest before the actual dying. Yeah. Then when the death process takes place, what happens is the four elements, they will start to fail. Four elements. Starts to fail. So the first one, like I say, is your heartbeat, your breath, gone. After your heartbeat, your breath gone, what will happen next? Which element will go? Heat will disappear. Understand? Then what happened to the earth element? When there is no more wind element. Because the breath is the wind element. The wind element is the one that keeps you in posture. Do you understand? Maintain your backbone, everything. When the wind element is gone, your earth element cannot stay. Do you understand? Yes, there is nothing to support it. Muscle all gone. Nothing to hold them together. That's why this earth element will start to collapse. And when the earth element starts to collapse, it's actually mentioned in the Tibetan Book of Death. I haven't read it. But I heard a very advanced cultivator. He's a lay person also, from Taiwan. I think he is a doctor. Doctor. You all heard of him, Hong Wen Liang? You heard of him? He is supposed to be the Nan Huai Jing's chief disciple. He loved him a lot. He's a lay person, but he's supposed to be his blue eye boy. So this guy is a good cultivator. He shared with us when he was in PJ at that time, I think 10 over years ago. He shared with us this particular sutta. It seems it's in the Tibetan Sutta, the Book of Death. How the death process happened. Then according to that paper he photostated for us, he said when this earth element start to fail, when you die that time, it seems you will go through a death process. It will let you see all the things that you do. Then they will tell you what happened to you and all those things. But that one is very short, very fast. But you will see through it very fast. But before that, there is a stage where all these elements fail. Then what happened is, it's like magnify, until it is like very real. So all this karmic negativity that you have done, the karmic fruition of all this negative karma, they will come and haunt you. Yeah. Then they create a lot of like very, very fearful type of happening. So when all these earth elements start to fail, when wind element no more, so it's like your consciousness will pick it up like earthquake like that. No? That's why those who don't have the Dhamma got a lot of karmic negativity. That karmic imprint of what they have done, like come back and haunt them and make them very fearful. Yeah. Then when they are in that consciousness, they don't know what is going on. Yeah. So because of that, here the sutta is mentioned that is suffering. Okay, you turn to page 303, second paragraph. The body is composed of elements, earth, air, fire and water. At death, the element break down. Okay? He used the word scatter. And that is the state of unspeakable suffering. You understand that? That is what I described just now. Unspeakable suffering. You'll go through that process. Yeah. You can't call suffering happiness. That's like those who know. They will know. the death process, there is no bliss. Understand? But the consciousness that has the Dhamma, that is free and liberated, need not suffer. That one with the awareness will understand clearly all these are not real. Then your good karma, yeah, your whatever cultivation and wholesomeness, the fruition of it will also come, it seems, according to that teaching. Yeah. That one will come and help you, tell you not to panic. Yeah. Even for those who are not enlightened. You see, because you have done a lot of good things, the good karma will come and protect you, take care of you. Then he will also, if you are a cultivator, maybe 6:30 one, not the good one, he will say, maintain mindfulness. Yeah, awareness. Just aware. Don't be afraid. Don't have fear and all those things. Yeah. But then, too late. When you are in that state, whatever you don't have, you don't have. Whatever you have, you will have. So if you have the right cultivation, the awareness, when you go through this death process, there is no problem. Because these are all very easy to comprehend, to understand. And when you understand the unconditioned Dhamma and the conditioned Dhamma, then you know these are all manifestation of mind. Conditioned arising state, phenomenal, dependent originating, no reality. Then you know how to silence. And when you meditate with the awareness-based meditation, when you already experience those silent awareness and all that, then you will know how to die. Dying is no problem at all. Then this mind will know how to cease. When the craving force happens, you will be fully aware of what is happening. Then how your consciousness come out, the random of consciousness, you will understand. Then how the cessation go through. Yeah. So all this can happen. But what I want you to understand is to explain that part. Why they say the four elements, when they disperse, there is this unspeakable suffering. So that you understand. So that he straight away tell this monk, how can you be so foolish to go and believe in the externalist teaching? Son of Sakya, and how can you hold the deviant view of annihilation and permanence? These are all views, opinion, and belief system which is not real. Then after that, we read on. Hey, said the great master, you are a disciple of Sakyamuni Buddha. You have left home and are a member of the Sangha. How can you harbor the deviant views and deviant knowledge of a non-Buddhist religion? You say that there is a Dhamma body apart from the physical body, and its extinction, and that there is a tranquil extinction apart from the process of production and extinction. Isn't this what you are saying? You also say that there is a body which enjoys the four virtues of Nibbana, permanence, bliss, true self. See? Those who cling on to the true self. Or Atman, and purity. In fact, your theory are nothing but negligence, attachment to birth and death, and worldly pleasure. Stuck in the mundane world, you cannot possibly know or understand the transcendental bliss. So this is what Xuan Hua explained. And now I will explain to you what actually happened. Hopefully, after that, you can have better understanding. You see, when you are still alive as a five aggregate of form and mind, this physical body, the first aspect, this one can go through cessation, can realize Nibbana. Then when this form and mind go through cessation, what is your understanding? Which one go into extinction? Which one go into extinction? The mundane mind ceases, isn't it? When the mundane mind ceases and realizes itself through wisdom that these are not real, then you let it be, so this one will cease. The moment it ceases, it becomes the unconditioned. Do you understand? Do you understand? When you become the unconditioned, where got bliss? Where got words? You understand? So this monk don't understand. He still use the thought, believe that there is an extinction. Of course, Nibbana is cessation. But what cease? Nobody know. Hardly anybody know. Yet you don't go through, you will have a lot of idea of what Nibbana is. But Nibbana is not an idea. It's cessation. It's the unconditioned. It can only arise when the mundane mind ceases. Completely cease, no? Not become very quiet, still, and no movement. No? That one is the tranquil mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind. That one is no cessation as yet. Do you understand? You remember? I used to share with you during the early days. Cessation means completely, even the pure awareness also gone. Nothing inside that. No mind state at all. No mind. But it doesn't mean no thought. Do you understand? No thought is just the mundane mind sees. And that one, it can be in the state of awareness. Just aware before the knowing. But when you realize Nibbana, even the awareness also sees. The pure awareness, the pure so-called true mind also sees. The whole thing sees. That's why you cannot talk about it. So there is nothing for you to hold on to and say, what experience extinction? The thought that realizes itself and sees is not a being. Understand? It's not you. It's not a body where you can hold on to, cling on to, and say, this body experience extinction. Then when you are in the state of unconditioned, how can there be bliss? Do you understand? That's why his doubt is from the thought. It's foolishness. Means you don't understand the true Buddha Dhamma. Okay?
Rajan, sorry to interrupt you, but according to one phrase, even Rajan always say, Nibbana Paramang Sukhang. So, but there's no bliss. No, cannot be spoken of it. How come Buddha said Nibbana Paramang Sukhang?
Yeah, very good question. I answered it before, I think, many times, even at the retreat and in the sharing. You know why this phrase come about? Because Nibbana is cessation of form and mind, cessation of everything. What else can be a higher peace? I call it peace. Because when the Buddha mentioned that, it is just like an analogy for you to understand. If you go through the worldly life, the form and mind, no matter what type of bliss you experience, you understand? This type of bliss are still worldly, understand? Even the jhana, everything, is still thought-based. But when you realize that cessation of form and mind, there is real liberation of form and mind. And the form and mind that go through that type of cessation will understand what that thing is. Where is the stealing of all condition. When all conditioned Dhamma are stealed, what else can be higher than that type of? You can try to describe it, but it's not something describable, understand? That's why he used it as an analogy. No matter what type of bliss you may try to achieve in the conditioned world, but Nibbana is Paramang Sukhang, the highest place. That is the understanding, not what you think. That's why the thinking mind always think. They appear like very contradictory. You remember? Krishnamurti say, real meditation, no effort. The effort is by the thought. Then you may say, the Buddha's teaching got right effort, no? Why you say no effort? That's why you cannot understand. So the thought will create this type of contradiction. Apparent, like contradiction. But when you truly understand as a cultivator, when you go through all this, you will know what the Buddha meant. And the Buddha said you need right effort is at the beginning, where you use thought. That's like the four right effort. The first two is regarding the thought. Right effort to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. Then right effort to cultivate the right thought that is still not in you. But this one, regarding thought, you use effort. But when it comes to meditation, samasati, there is no more thought, understand? It's all sati, awareness, the true mind, aware. That's it. And that is the one that awakened, that realized. That's the reason why I say, if you don't understand the unconditioned Dhamma, the supramundane Dhamma, you will be very confused by the mundane Dhamma. It keeps on telling you a lot of stories. And you cannot understand what the Buddha is trying to tell you. Well, the Buddha, actually, under many of his teaching, if you don't understand the unconditioned Dhamma, the supramundane Dhamma, it appears very contradictory. The five daily contemplation, remember? The last one is what? We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. Then the Buddha said, everything is anatta, non-self. Then how come God, me, born of karma, heir to karma, conditioned and supported by my karma, and I am what I am because of my... You think the Buddha lied, contradict himself? No, he's referring to this form and mind. He's not referring to that unconditioned Dhamma. So when he uses the conditioned Dhamma, you have to understand. Like Nibbana, Paramang Sukha, is a conditioned Dhamma. Where he also mentioned Nibbana is the unconditioned. You cannot talk about it. You cannot describe it. You cannot even give it any words, like the Tao. So you have to understand clearly the conditioned Dhamma or mundane Dhamma and the supramundane or unconditioned Dhamma. If you cannot have this realization, you will not be able to comprehend. That's the reason why in Heart Sutta, the Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's Heart Sutta, she mentioned very clearly, he said, in true emptiness, when you have realized true emptiness, when you have gone through the complete cessation, the realization of Nibbana, then only you can understand why the Buddha say everything doesn't exist. There is no birth, old age, sickness and death. There is no one to be enlightened. No attainment, nothing. Four Noble Truths also cease to be. That's why last Sunday, I think, or even in the Thursday class, Padmasuri, before he went to Taiwan, I think she went this Thursday, I think. She's not back yet. She's still in Fakusan. He go there for this chanting, the Surangama Sutta chanting. And he read it in the Surangama Sutta. I also didn't know Surangama Sutta got mentioned this. He said, inside there, he said, no wonder the chanting, Surangama Sutta say, there is no Four Noble Truths, no one born, no one die, no one sick, no one old, and everything that is within the mundane Dhamma, all doesn't exist under the chanting. Then she was full of joy. He said, now I understand. No wonder, I said, the Surangama Sutta mentioned. He said, when she was chanting the Surangama Sutta, she got doubt. Well, on the one hand, Sakyamuni Buddha taught all this, isn't it? Then, on the other hand, the Sutta said, all this don't exist, like Sing Ching. So how are you going to reconcile? It's nothing difficult, except you don't understand from which point the Buddha is referring to. When he teaches the conditioned Dhamma, he's referring it to the conditioned Dhamma. When he teaches the unconditioned Dhamma, then he teaches you how to free your mind and liberate and tell you this is all delusion. There is no such thing. That's why Fata, it's not Fata, Zutao, he was reprimanded by Huining, you remember? Well, he cling on to deviant view. He still seek what? Somebody to be enlightened, no? To realize extinction and bliss, no? How do I meditate for what? The thought is still holding on. That's why the deviant teaching, which is Wai Tao, they will have this type of search. The thought will search for eternal bliss, eternal heaven, or even the ultimate self, the Atman, the Hindu, and all those things. They have a lot of this type of teaching. And to them, there is eternal bliss. So if you are so gullible, attracted by eternal bliss, so what do you want? You prefer eternal bliss or suffering in this world? You sure? Those gullible ones, go for eternal bliss. But they don't understand that there is no such thing. Within the conditioned world, nothing is eternal. It's subject to change. Even the devas, they fall. The Brahmas, they fall. No matter what existence you are, the 31 plane, the formless rhyme, the Brahma rhyme, or even the Deva rhyme. Finally, because it is the conditioned world, you will still fall. And you will keep on going through existence, birth and death, birth and death. So the secret of life is to understand that these two body are not what you think. These two body is for you to understand what creation is all about. You have to understand without the karmic body, the physical body, which is the karmic body, the five degree of form and mind, that's why it's karmically conditioned, you don't have a vehicle and a tool to come to this world, existential world. So whoever, whatever being that want to come, they have to come through karma. That's it. That's why you must have this. Even the bodhisattva know this. But they don't come as a deluded being. Do you understand? They take birth through the vow, through their pure mind, love and compassion, their first vow. That's how they can come. Law of karma still condition a form and mind, but the consciousness that went in is not avijja, not born of ignorance. It is born of pure mind, love and compassion. That's how it can come. Then when it comes, it needs to perfect itself through the Dhamma body, the spiritual body. So that perfection using the true mind will develop this Dhamma body, which will become a nature. A nature means your spiritual nature. So this spiritual nature, when it comes, connect to this physical form and mind, it will trigger off the transformation into this Dhamma body. So this Dhamma body is a combination of three things. The physical form and mind, with the perfection of all the 10 perfection or whatever cultivation that you have. So when you connect through your meditation, silence your mind, then you inherit all this will come back to you. Then this form and mind connected with that type of spiritual perfection, he will have the understanding to teach. That's how it becomes the Dhammakaya, Dhamma body. It's like the three body of the Buddha. The first body is the physical form and mind. That one is, they call Nimanakaya. And that one performs the function of the Buddha. And you also have your own Nimanakaya that performs the function of who you are. Okay? Because this is the functional body. We call it the functional body, Nimanakaya. Not Nibbana. Nimana. Yeah. So this body, everybody has. But if you don't know how to meditate, if you don't have your past, your perfection, you cannot connect to your true nature, your true mind. Then if you cannot connect, you cannot inherit. If you cannot inherit, this spiritual nature will not come in. That's why you will not have the wisdom connected. And because of that, you cannot teach the Dhamma. There, it will not translate or transform into the third body, Dhamma body. Like now, this form and mind that my nature took to come, because of the perfection, when it cultivate during the early days, then it connect. that it inherits. That's why it has this manifestation from inside, connected to this form and mind. And this form and mind is not me. It's just a vehicle and a tool for this nature to come. And because it's connected to this spiritual nature, perfection, it inherited, it can share the Dhamma with you. So this is a combination of all the things. The functional body, the spiritual body, and the Dhamma body. So when these two goes into this five aggregate of form and mind, it can perform the function of a Dhamma body. And then you can say this is the Dhamma body. But this Dhamma body is not me, understand? It's a combination of conditions. Do you understand? Can follow? Huh. So when you understand this, your understanding and your training will be different. Your cultivation will become very different. Very, very different. Okay? Yeah. So we finish that part. Huh? English, yes.
I want to ask one question on this cessation of the mundane mind, cessation of body, form and mind, the total cessation of form and mind. Cessation of form, maybe is, I don't know, because I haven't experienced it, it's through my contemplation, maybe it's the no more grasping on the physical body, no more knowledge of the physical body at the moment, and then cessation of mind. Maybe it's the no more thoughts, no more the four elements of mind, the Vedana, no
aggregate,
more
aggregate, the four aggregates of mind.
No more feeling,
yeah.
The feeling, sanya, perception, yeah. No more remember
activity
the past,
of mind,
activity
yeah.
of mind,
mind,
sankhara
and
also.
Consciousness also
consciousness
no more.
Consciousness is the one I want to ask.
Also no more. That's why I say the pure awareness, the conscious mind, which is in pure awareness without content, that one also sees. What you are trying to understand is you are still using your thought, because this thought will tell you the word is cessation of form and mind. But this form and mind refer to the five aggregate, second aspect.
Mental.
Aspect. The second aspect. The mental form, understand or not? All mental form created through consciousness. It's not the physical form. Not like you mentioned, when you contemplate, you can detach from the four elements. No, that one is this cessation of form and mind is the second aspect, the five aggregate, mental five aggregate, completely cease.
And then, okay, so if this is the second aspect, the mental form and mind, the consciousness also... No more.
Never mind, continue to know.
The consciousness also no more.
No more.
Okay.
Everything
even
ceased.
The pure consciousness without...
No more. The true mind all cease.
But the person is not dead,
not
in
dead.
Coma, not,
not
in sleeping.
Dead. No, no, no heartbeat.
No heartbeat, okay.
Then so the brain, the brain here, kosong. No consciousness at all.
So if that is that type of scenario, so how can this five aggregates of form and mind realize the unconditioned Dhamma when there's no consciousness? Totally no more consciousness.
Okay, very good.
This is just
very
a
good question. No, it's
question.
A very good, it's a very good
how
question.
How to recognize that, understand that it's in the unconditioned Dhamma when there's no more consciousness, even pure consciousness.
It's a very good question.
And
in
what
fact,
happened in Wat Nalong?
Oh, is it? Sadhu. Oh, happened. What? Oh, sadhu. I thought it happened. It happened, then you will understand. Very good, because very near. Because there, you, how many days was it?
5 to 17.
Because for her condition, with her understanding and her meditative training, she will be transformed into a very different state. When you can maintain that mindfulness continuously over that period. That's why I used to explain to a lot of cultivators, because if you cannot maintain the daily mindfulness after you come back, unless that cessation happened there, even a glimpse, sometimes you don't know, it can be a glimpse. That glimpse is just that moment. That very moment, straight away it cross over, then there is this clarity of mind. All of a sudden, like this one, become very clear. Like that moment, very fast, like a lightning flash, split second it sees. That was what happened in 1989 when I was in Cameron Highlands, San Pao Si. I was in a 5-day retreat. And because of my past, because of what I have done, the moment I went in there, I remember there was a Thai monk who conducted that retreat. The moment I went in, my mind settled down so fast. Then I just do my sitting, relaxation, then walking. I was fully aware, mindful, and my mind settled down. Immediately within the first day, it becomes so quiet. Then everything I do was full of mindfulness. Then when I sit, because my spiritual faculty, especially my sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, before the panya fully arise, I did a lot of contemplation that time. That nature was ready. So what happened was, every time I relax, silent, and I just sit, all of a sudden, one day, I realized my mind settled down. All the activities cease until no thought. No thought. Then, like nothing inside there. Then, like, you don't even know who you are, where you are, and all those things. Everything still. Then all of a sudden, as it continued this, it went through one moment of cessation. Then after that, this mind came out. Then this mind that is aware is like one with the whole of nature. With the whole of nature. Then what happened is, whatever this nature wants to know, even a distant sound, very, very far, non-perceivable by a normal human being through their normal senses, if it want to be aware, it can be aware. Then after that, very funny, you know, after that experience or that cessation, that process, even for one moment, when I start to come out of the formal meditation, that's what I can tell you, I realize this mindfulness follow me after that. Then it know what that brain is all about. Then it understand a lot of things. Then after that, the Dhamma or by itself, my form and mind understand. All of the teaching after that. Technically, you don't need teacher. Then when you go through the real cessation, then you understand the whole of the consciousness in the brain, your conscious mind, the consciousness that is trapped inside, it can manifest as split into three areas of consciousness which are very strong and very powerful. One of the areas where you use the most is your brain. The other one is your heart area, your feeling nearby there. Feeling. To arise consciousness and all those things, because the life force comes from there, they come in. The other one is Tan Tian there for your activity, the earthly energy. So when you go through the cessation, these three area of consciousness come back into one and cease. Means at your brain here, completely no more mind. You understand? No more mind. Your heart there also no more mind. The Tan Tian there also no. Your whole body don't have mind. But you didn't die. You won't become cold. Because you went into cessation. When that thing happened, that form and mind that go through, that's to answer your question, when it come out of it, do you know what happened or not? The first thing that happened is, from the center here, it's like you come back to life, you know. The life was come back, everything come back, but it was still in that pristine state. That beginning of creation, beginning of life. Then it is aware, it is fully aware, that this consciousness that come back straight away disperse into these three areas. But because the brain is the most prominent, straight away, because I already have by nature already have the awareness, straight away it knows, no, this brain from nothing, the moment this consciousness go out, it's like a dynamo start again. Then it start to perceive things, you know? It start to know things, you know? Then later on after the retreat also, I was whole day like the sense data hardly come in, you know? It's just that whole mind so still. Then I remember after the retreat, that monk saw me. He knew something happened to me, but he doesn't know what it is. I remember he told Pearly, the waver. He said, "You look at Brother Teo, he is very different. Yeah, I was so still." I think he can feel my energy, or don't know what, I don't know. But he knew I'm very different. Then you know what happened? When they go down and buy all these veggie, the camera, I cannot do anything. I just sit in the bus. And I sat in front. Then when the bus started to move, you know what happened? I saw the sense data, one by one, all coming in. Then how it go into the brain, then how it create consciousness, how it starts the whole process, like a baby seeing all this. Then I know how all this come about. How the form of mind dependent originating come about. Then how through your delusion without that wisdom and you react and you stir your mind and you create emotional. And how come this emotional body next to the heart, how it manifests all this. You can see it very clearly. That's why that form of mind that go through will understand all this. Then you tell him die already what or he will know you don't understand. There is no such thing. No one die. Who die? The consciousness just cease. And there is no being inside there. Neither is there any being outside of it. It is just a karmically conditioned for my mind. So this is the part that you wanted to understand. So it will happen. And the form and mind, when they go through this, they will understand. Because they saw all this creation, how it all started. Then they saw all this cessation too, how it all ceased. How the sankhara slow down. Then how it ceased. At first it become very tranquil, still. Then later on it continued to cease. Well, it will reach a stage, I remember, before the mundane mind collapse, it will reach a stage where your mind understands until you are very sensitive. You are very sensitive. Every moment of arising of consciousness is suffering. Even to arise a thought, even to arise a conscious mind is suffering. That every moment of perception that finds suffering inside, you are aware. That every moment of feeling, every moment of consciousness, there is this fine suffering inside. That's why there is nothing more blissful than cessation of all this. It will know. Because all this that you all perceive as good feeling, good experience and all this, actually at the very fine level of consciousness, these are all suffering. That's why you will fully understand after that why the Buddha says sabbe sankhara dukkhang. Then all of the aggregate one by one, rupang anatta, anicchang, then rupang anatta. Then you will also understand why rupang vedana sanya sankhara vinyana leads to suffering. Because these are grasping aggregate before the wisdom comes in. Then you start to have all this clear understanding. No wonder living beings suffer. Because they cannot understand all this. These are all naturally dependent, originating, condition arising, no reality. Who grasps, who clings? The deluded mind. The one that is still not awakened. That one. They will hold, they will cling, they will grab, they will give meaning. Because the phenomenal world is so real to them. Even their own consciousness is so real to them, the egoic mind. That's the reason why I say sakyaditi is very difficult to break. A lot of people think, oh, I know, non-self, not me. Self-delusion, no more. Most of them are at thought level. because they haven't gone through the real cessation. They haven't awakened to that thing. That's the reason why the Buddha say this third noble truth, second turning, what is it? Huh? Third noble truth is what? Cessation of form and mind, which is the realization of Nibbana under the second turning. This cessation is to be? If you cannot go through that cessation, forget about enlightenment. You can never understand. But the moment you go through, like I mentioned, even one glimpse, you will understand what this thing is. It becomes so clear after that. After that, everything becomes very clear. That's why technically, you don't need a teacher. Because the Buddha proclaimed the Dhamma very clearly. The last part, Pacetang Veditabbo Vinohiti. What is the meaning of that? This Dhamma can be realized only by the wise, each for themselves. Nobody else can know. Wise one means the awakened one. That's why you don't go through that cessation, you cannot know. You can only through the thought, contemplate, reflect, or even speculate. Or try to come up with an understanding. So these are the Dhamma that you have to slowly, through faith, develop the understanding. That's the reason why I always say, don't try to know, just do. Then when it happens, the form and mind will understand. Like sati, just develop your daily mindfulness, whether bowing or walking, standing or whatever. Maintain that mindfulness. Until finally that mindfulness arises, your form and mind will know what that thing is. You bow until you are fully aware throughout the day, the daily mindfulness, then you will see and understand what sati is. The realization of Nibbana is also the same. When you go through that cessation and come out of it, the form and mind will also understand. And all this will arise naturally. So have faith and develop it. Most of you are quite ready actually. But you have not done one part, your daily mindfulness. You have to stabilize that, I tell you. If you cannot stabilize that, means you are not heedful in the midst of life. You can go to retreat and try. If you have your past, chances is it can happen. Like what happened to me in 1989. It was a 5-day retreat. It happened on the second day. But the main one, if you really want to understand, is the daily mindfulness. Because before that, I already developed the daily mindfulness. That's why it can happen. If I have not developed the daily mindfulness to that stability, it can never happen. And without mindfulness to connect you back, there is no way you can understand what this is. The silent mind, the true mind, the meditative mind. Because I don't know what happened recently, there are more and more of these conditions for me to explain all this. Like last Thursday, the two sisters, Stacy and the sister Jessie, Jessica, they were only, I think college, still in college. Stacy is 23. Your sister is 21, They come for Dhamma, and they got this type of out-of-body experience and all those things, They themselves also don't understand until that Thursday. She was full of joy. Said, oh, at least somebody has experienced things like what I gone through. They said the color type of dream and all those things that come with those beings. All this can never really happen. But because of what happened, all this sharing start to come out. You ask those Tuesday class on. Tuesday class, we went through this, the mundane and the supramundane. I explained about that. Then today, somehow, there is condition again. And what is good is they go through Wat Na Long. That one very good. It's a retreat, isn't it? Very good. You want to share? Later, after meditation. Okay. So far, okay. No problem. Very good. I also rejoice. Because there is a lot of condition for all this understanding to come out. Okay, so we stop at 3:03. We will have our meditation. So we are off the light. And you can have your silent meditation. Those who already know how to meditate, you can proceed. And those who need to train your mind, you develop the training, appropriate training. You can use the mind sweeping method to calm yourself down. Then stabilize your mindfulness through whatever skillful means that you are used to or you are accustomed to. The key thing to meditation is to relax, silent and just aware. Relax body and mind. Let the mind settle down. Let everything settle down. Don't try to know. Thought arise, let it arise. Because these are conditioned arising entity. You just silent. Allow it to be. Don't resist. Don't try to do anything. Then it will slowly on its own slow down. In fact, that is an easier way to meditate. Just relax, silent. But if mind sweeping method can bring about the calmness and help you to reach this state faster, you can use it. Then when you are back at home, silent your mind more and more and develop the daily mindfulness. Once your daily mindfulness stabilizes, your meditation becomes very easy. And to do that, you must have faith. Your faith must be very strong. Then the faith will drive you. After knowing who the Buddha is, how special a being he is, and how wonderful this teaching is. Okay? Okay, I will ring the bell after half an hour. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, yeah, you can continue. For those who have had enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Yeah? Then always remember to maintain the mind state that has been trained. Yeah? If there is any inner calmness, inner awareness, or inner mindfulness, continue to stabilize that, huh? And develop this ability to be mindful in the midst of life. You need to carry this trained mind state of sati, mindfulness, into your daily life. Whatever you do in life, you are just aware. Don't try to know. When your mindfulness stabilizes, until you are mindful in the midst of life, you will understand many things. Your mind will start to understand, awaken, and develop the direct seeing on its own. Yeah. Not until the mindfulness arises or stabilizes. It's not easy. Yeah, it's not easy. Okay, now we will come over to the second session, where we can have your reporting of the meditation, followed by whatever sharing, huh? Question and sharing. Huh? Anybody? Yeah. Got anything? Don't have, huh? Whatever that you experienced just now, you can also just describe to me how you went through the meditation, and I can guide you along. Yeah. If not, pass to Ingbi, let her share that what not long. Yeah.
Good evening, Radio, Mr. Steele, and all calamitas. This one, a long trip, is organized by this Tung Chien Sufu.
Yeah.
And then Amon, our Kun Mon, and Joe, the translator.
Yeah.
And there's one Mechi, Air. Her name is Air.
Yeah.
Quite beautiful. And
Yeah.
And then there's one.
Mechi,
there's one young lady, Kun Tui. She was our photographer who took our photograph, and then Rosie Ann shared it in
our
WhatsApp group. And then she burned two CD each and given to all of us. Very nice of them. And then that was supposed to be a first international meditation retreat conducted by Wat Na Luang.
Not
only 21 of us from Malaysia, there were some from China, Hong Kong. One Argentina. Argentinian, one man, Argentina. Singapore, Singapore, yes. A few of them. So they call it international. So, basically, all the Dhammas delivered by Longpo Tonglai, they are all similar to what Brother Teo shared with us. They are all the same. So they stress more on, because this is the first international meditation retreat, they stress a lot on the three periods, the three training.
Pariyatti, Paripatti, and Pariveda.
So they stress on the first stage, the
Pati, understanding, Pariyatti. Pariyatti, understanding
so
the teaching.
They so-called teach us the
basic mundane dhamma. Very
so
important.
They always stress a lot on our togetherness, on how we sit, how we from sitting to standing, and then from standing to walking from walking to
whatever activity.
Sit, stand, walk. We were given three monks teacher. One having I think 18 vasa. One is 10 vasa, 10 vasa, 1 8 vasa, something like that.
Okay.
So the 18 vasa can speak a little bit of Mandarin. And then, but most of the Dhamma guides, mundane Dhamma guides by the second and the third monks. So, roughly, our schedule is started at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Chanting?
No, they don't stress on chanting.
Oh, okay,
the normal chanting is at 4 o'clock, which I was the only one join the chanting.
Okay.
After 4 o'clock, when they do meditation, 4:45, I run away to this 5 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
5 o'clock, the majority of us.
Oh, that one 5 o'clock one, they will chant for quite a while.
The 4 o'clock one, they chant for 1 hour.
1 hour, yeah.
Morning 4 o'clock, evening 5 o'clock. But evening one, I have no chance to join. Because I have to join this retreat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then our 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock is 1 hour session where first 3 days, we were asked to sit only 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then the monk will signal us. He hasn't got a bell. He just said, he just touched the microphone, alert you. 10 minutes sit, 10 minutes stand, and 10 minutes walk.
Last for
3 days. And on the fourth day onwards is 15 sit, 15 minutes stand and walk, 15 minutes. And another 3 days was 20 minutes, 20 minutes. They increased 5 minutes every 3 days.
3 days, yeah.
We managed to learn until 20 minutes. We haven't achieved the 25 minutes. So, one thing good about this 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes is when we sit or when we stand or when we walk, we can be alerted by the monk so that we are not indulged in our thoughts
or thinking
moment.
Yeah.
Because the first 3 days, I think most of us are still adjusting ourselves,
full
of thoughts when we sit or stand or walk.
Yeah.
So when 10 minutes is up, we have to change our posture. So from there, we start again.
Yeah, yeah.
So we are not lost in thought.
Correct, yeah.
So the weakness of it is, for those more advanced people, when they are 10 minutes already settled down,
in you have to come out.
Sati, then you have to change position. But you have to do it mindfully
from
sitting to standing or walking.
Yeah.
So actually it doesn't matter. It's just
that you are
not sitting
whether
all the while.
Whether you understand the cultivation or not.
So the daily mindfulness and the movement in between the four posture is very important to connect them up. So they don't teach lying down posture training.
Yeah.
Only three posture. My own preference is, don't know why during that retreat I prefer the walking.
Yeah.
Because the walking there's also at first is quite kaku, quite
because
they tell us to put our two hands at the
navel
there. Whether your right hand in front or at the back.
Yeah. Yes, I understand.
So that you are more composed when you walk.
You're not like chai chai to walk like that.
You are more composed. Like, I think Mahayana also stress a lot like that. So at first I felt it very not natural.
Where you are not used to that posture.
Compose ourselves. But very funny is after one or two times training, I felt it's very nice and then nothing there already. Yeah. It's very total relaxation.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't feel the burden of the two hands there.
Yeah.
It is nothing there actually. It's nothing there. You just walk. And then they teach us, I think they are more similar to Burmese style. Step number one is lifting, dropping. Step number two is more lifting, pushing, dropping. And then under six steps, all the labeling. They don't really teach us to label.
But
they
tell
us to do that movement.
They have to explain to you.
Explain to us until six steps. And then, since I have been joining Radio since 2009, I have been trying so hard to drop the label for first 2 years. 2010 only I successful. Now I don't label anymore.
Yeah,
they're
very easy.
Just flow. Sometimes because my eyes were still, after cataract removal, very sensitive to light.
To the light.
I close my eyes and then just open a line like that.
A little bit.
Or even wear sunglasses night, the reflection of the marble flooring and the light spotlight is very bright. So I close my eyes most of the time and then sometimes I just walk and then I don't really feel the steps. I just feel my movement of my body.
That is the right one.
I feel the movement of my body.
Yeah. Means your awareness and your body move as one.
Yeah.
You just do. You continue to do until that awareness finally, stabilize. then your form and mind will know one. Your form and mind will know what that sati is all about. That's why don't worry about whatever you do. In the name of meditation, you must understand what you are doing. You are there to train your mind to be aware. That is the first thing. Then if you understand that your spiritual faculty is not there, the mental hindrance will be there. So you have to work on your spiritual faculty. But what they are teaching you, because you are in a retreat, you are there for a period, so they are training you to do the daily mindfulness, the daily routine. That's how you have to wake up on time, then maintain mindfulness on the three posture. Then when you sleep, of course, you include the fourth posture. But whatever posture you are in, you can maintain awareness. You just have to silence your mind and your body as one. Then when you move, whatever movement, your hand, your leg, your body, all this will follow. Then, like I said, when you walk, the whole of mindfulness is different when you are in the state of sati. Because you not only, like they teach you, focus on the leg. They say, first, like we say, rise, step. Then later on, extend it. Move, then slowly, then away. The actual walking is, you just walk. Just walk like bowing, you just bow. Until the mindfulness come, you know what happened? Not only aware of the leg or what, everything, the whole body, all the movement, like Ng B say, that movement is fully with your awareness. That is the real sati. And when that sati come, you realize everything you do, you are in sati. Then after that, you go back and sit. Very easy to sit on. You straight away no thought. Straight away you go in, you just relax, silent. That sati will take over. When sati take over, your mind will settle down straight away. Because there is no mental hindrance. But you must understand your mind. You must be fully aware of your mind. Whenever the mind react or stir, means mental hindrance, like and dislike, pleasant, unpleasant. And this mind state constantly arises in the cultivator, especially those who don't have the Dhamma understanding. Every moment of sense experience, you will have your preference, I tell you. And sometimes you, within your own mental chattering, mumbling, complaining, especially when the weather is not so conducive and when you are not used to the type of training that they are explaining to you, and you have preference to do your own. But most important is, like you say, when you understand, you can fit it. You know what this thing is. Then you can do it on your own, using your own understanding. Sometimes you don't have to completely follow, because when you already understand, you can do it on your own. Even when they interview you, or when they maybe ask you to report, you can just report. And when you understand what you are doing, they will be very happy to hear what you are doing. Because all these are instructions given, like he's a beginner, to train the yogi to understand the teaching, to understand what you are doing in the name of meditation. So all these are very useful. That's why now you look at things so different from last time. Last time you will be very interested in the instruction. Then you try to interpret the instruction. Then you try to walk like what you believe they tell you to walk, or sit like what they tell you to sit. But that is that tradition, their training. That is what the Long Po Tong Bai actually advise. So you have to see where you fit in and how you can benefit. If you are new, then have an open mind. Listen. Then find out for yourself. Give it a try. Like what Ng B mentioned, when you walk, you're supposed to put your palm on your navel there. Tan Tien. If you do that as a routine, after a while, this Tan Tien there is an energy point, the chakra. And when you put your palm there, this one actually can open it up. Open it up. If you can feel your energy when you are calm, when you are more peaceful, yeah? Because you are in a tranquil setting. So what they are trying to do is they try to activate this chakra point for you without you knowing. Yeah. Then when this one is released, you got a lot of energy. Then very easy to go into concentration and all those things. But it's also one of the way to stabilize your walking. Well, this is what they believe. Yeah, will help you. So that's why they teach you how to put there. But what is more important is you must understand what you are doing in the name of meditation. It means you are there to train yourself to develop this daily mindfulness, which is very good. So if you can have that training, it will benefit you. Then in whatever posture, you can do that in that training, means 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or 25 minutes, means you don't sit long. Because they scared you go into concentration, samatha. Then, like NB say, they want you to maintain mindfulness. Otherwise you sit and you are lost in thought, also you don't know. Then some of you may be struggling down there. A lot of pain, a lot of numbness, a lot of what they call difficulty to maintain that posture. And yet you cannot move. That's why they know better don't put them through all this. And I used to say you are there to train your mind, to develop your mindfulness, your understanding of the teaching. You are not there to torture yourself. If you torture yourself, you might as well sit at home. Have a coffee, look at the TV, listen to music. You have better time. But most people want to go because they believe you go to a retreat, the setting, everything is very conducive. It can help you to settle down, calm down your mind, make you more calm or more peaceful. But when you already have the understanding, you go, you become very different. You will know what to do. And whatever they teach you, you can actually accord and flow and just go with it. And you will have a lot of joy because the setting there is different. I've been to Wat Na Long before. It's very good nature, beautiful setting. Then they have this vibration too when the monk chant and all those things. Okay, continue.
So 5 to 6, we have 1 hour of meditation session, and then 6 to 6:30, we have our porridge, morning porridge. After 6:30, we come back to the meditation hall to do cleaning. Everybody, whether do sweeping, mopping, or washing toilet, or those.
You have to do it mindfully.
And then after that, we have our rest time until 7:45. Meet again at the 8 o'clock. Actually, 8 o'clock at the what they call it. The hall next to the dana table
I know.
Where we meet, and then we are guided by the monk again on contemplation before meal. At 8:30 to 8:45 we are supposed to walk to collect our food. In the contemplation, the monk teach us on 9 contemplation on food, on anicca, sanya perception, but they translate into contemplation. Anicca sanya, anatta sanya, asubha sanya. Asubha means foulness. Anatta yonola, and then marana sanya, death, contemplation on death. Or dead food lah. Whatever we eat is actually dead.
No life.
No life. Marana sanya. What else? I didn't.
Never mind.
The nine
contemplations.
Marana, and then one is Sabaloke, Anavirata. It's actually based on Girimananda.
It's all the inside.
The ten dasa dhamma. Where this monk by the name Girimananda was sick, and then Ananda asked Buddha to go and pay him a visit, but instead Buddha tell Ananda to go ahead with this 10 dhamma chant to him,
he recovered fully.
This 10 dhamma, but actually in this contemplation of food, they teach us only 9. On detachment, on abandonment, on disadvantages of this body and mind, eye diseases, ear diseases. So after food also, they have 5 contemplation, shorten it. from 9 to 5.
So
the monk teaches on all these things. And then we started to walk from senior to junior.
Oh, okay.
Because senior to junior is always the last. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
No more fruits, no more the yummy stuff.
Yeah,
left
yeah.
Only very little food left. So seniors are advantageous. You better go. Juniors like 23 years old, 21 years old. You must be more patient.
Yeah.
When we walk to collect alms food, we were told to keep our distance from the person in front of us about 1.5 meters.
Yeah.
So that we don't clash, or we actually encourage to do our walking meditation.
Yes.
Anytime you must be mindful.
Yeah, you have to be mindful.
So that 1.5 meters is very good for us to put our eyes look in front 45 degrees instead of looking at whatever scenery, left or right.
Yeah.
So that one is one. And then barefooted under hot sun. But now the all cemented flooring, no more pebbles to poke your reflexology of the foot. There's nothing like actually.
Last time
even worse when I was there, all pebbles.
Yeah.
And then we collect food and then come back and then we do the chanting or blessing Bhavatu Sabba Mangala Kantu Sabba Devata. And then we start our food and then contemplation of food after meal. Then we disperse and then come back for, this is 8:30, 9:30, 10:30 like that.
Yes,
then we have our rest time until 12 o'clock, we meet again.
Okay.
12 to 3, another meditation session at the meditation hall.
Then
after 3, we adjourn 5 to 8:30 at night, another session.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually quite intense.
Very good.
And
so
then,
that 3 hours, they ask you to sit, walk, stand.
Yes, only first hour they do that.
Oh, okay. After that?
Second hour, they sort of say flexi. They say freestyle.
Actually,
it's not right, freestyle. It's free timing up to you whether you want to sit 10 minutes or sit 20 minutes or half an hour, then walk and stand. All the three postures up to you, no more restricted to 10, 15 or 20 minutes. The second hour lah. They let you go on your own preference of timing. Before I forget about lying down, so they taught us during the last day.
They did mention.
Joe was lying down and showed us like the Buddha Parinirvana posture. But is it because our hand cannot be forever like that? Not like Buddha, he can go into jhana. So he advised us to put down our hand and then maybe support
as a pillow.
But the leg, instead of straightened like Buddha, we can curve out and then try not to overlap, and then the pain will be there, something like that. At last, they also teach us lying down posture. At first, I thought I want to ask already, Buddha teach four posture, why don't you introduce this four posture? They already introduced, so I kept my mouth shut.
Which is good. Yeah, at least people know that you can do it. Otherwise, they say, Tongpo Tongbai also never teach. You cannot do. Then that become another
opinion. They never encourage you to do it in shrine hall.
Definitely, they get your snore.
Maybe in the bedroom.
Then it will become like, what is this type of meditation? All snoring. That's why people cannot understand. Even I remember the Singapore brother, you remember the first retreat he came? First day, he not used to it. He said, what is this going on? Is it? A lot of people just lie down, like sleep, like there's some snore. So. Well, he can't understand. Then on the second day, after he finished questioning, then he developed the faith already. So he tried it. The moment he lie down, not long, he heard his own snoring. Then only he understand why people snore. Because you relax and aware. Then this body will settle down. The thought, everything will settle down. Then natural tendency is this body will go into the whatever snoring mode. Means the snoring is your body wanting to sleep, go into the subconscious and the unconscious, then you sleep. Because when you are tired, you will sleep. So you're supposed to maintain awareness. And that snoring is the indicator. But the moment you snore and you are not aware, means you are not meditating. You are gone. But the moment you snore, actually before the full sound, the first sound, before the crawl, that first one you aware already. Then you will be fully aware of the whole thing. Then you continue to relax. Because you know how to relax, then the snoring will come back. Then you realize after that you hardly sleep. You are just aware most of the time. Then when this awareness becomes weak, the snoring will become clear again to you. Then it reminds you of sati. That's why you are like there, sleeping, resting your body, but you never sleep. Because you are fully aware. How can you sleep when the snoring, the first sound, you already aware? You understand? That is what sleeping meditation is all about. You are most of the time aware. And people cannot do that. Because the moment they lie down, either they sleep or they just cannot sleep. Yeah. Like a lot of people got insomnia. What happened is, you want to sleep, you cannot sleep. You force yourself to sleep, also you don't sleep. Then some people, they go and read books, they go and see TV, until they're too tired, then they sleep. Then there are some who go and exercise until they are very tired, exhausted, then only they go and sleep. A lot of people do that. So if you are a cultivator, meditate, you don't need all this. A lot of people tell me, you drink coffee, you cannot sleep. You take Chinese tea, you cannot sleep. A lot of things that has this, what they call caffeine, or something that wake you up. For me, anything I take, I want to sleep, I just sleep. I got no problem. Then if I just know that my body is tired, need rest, I will just rest. It is your understanding. Of course, all this drug got an effect on you. But when you understand your mind, you just let it be. When I was studying, I tested. A few of my classmates say, "Hey, you sleepy? You take essence of chicken, you won't sleep one. Then you can study." I tell you, essence of chicken, my father passed it to me. I take 2 bottles, also I sleep. If I want to sleep, I just sleep. That's it. So when you understand, your mind got no problem. But when you don't understand, you are struggling with it, fighting it, you cannot. Meditation is about understanding. When you understand, meditation becomes very easy. That's why I don't have problem meditating. And I don't do like what people teach me. I just naturally settle in without having to learn it from anybody. Yeah. And of course, Anapanasati just come by itself. The first time I said the Anapanasati came. Then after that, when I move into daily mindfulness, then I realize when the daily mindfulness is there, I don't have to train my mind. Straight away, my mind settle down. Straight away, I'm in sati. Because throughout the day, you are in sati. Why do you need to let the mind settle down? Your mind need to settle down because it is heedless most of the time throughout the day. Very good. Anything else?
Sometimes before we go arms round, arms foot, walk to collect arms foot, we were having some time, so we walk around the contemplation place before meal. We walk around, follow the monk. The monk will walk, lead us and walk around, surrounding the whole place. And then in the evening, 5 o'clock when we meet, at 4:30 we have our afternoon tea. It's a compulsory to gather together, take the afternoon tea, but if you don't want to take, it's okay. And then after that, we will adjourn for walk around the lake, the whole lake.
The lake is
which
very
is
big.
Beautiful.
Serene.
And then the distance is double the 1.5, so they encourage us to be 3 meters away. So that when we walk, we are not affected by the person in front of us, and then we are not affecting anybody behind us. So it's really in your own meditation mode. But at the same time, you are in a whole group led by a monk in the front. So it was beautiful when you turn the curve and you can see like what?
I saw in the video. In the photo too.
I was not having any...
But I was... There is one thing that I want you all to be aware of. I saw a lot of you, your face are too serious. Very serious. You are okay. You understand because you relax, you silent. A lot of all those who don't understand, they force themselves to be silent. And you look at their face, you know, they are very too serious. Not relaxed at all. And so, trying to maintain that routine, that practice, that discipline. Means they don't know how to relax and just be natural. If you cannot be mindful in the midst of a natural relaxed state, that itself is a thought-based meditation. Because you are seriously trying to practice what they tell you. And who is practicing? The thought is practicing. Yeah. I saw many of them were like that. Only a handful who know how to relax, silent, then just develop the ability to silent. Meditation is very easy when you understand. Your ability to be aware and silent, that's meditation. Don't try to know. When that mindfulness stabilizes, all the understanding will come. But when people don't have the understanding, their focus is on method, technique, seeking for peace and calmness. That's where meditation go wrong. There's nothing wrong if you understand. Because the mental hindrances are there, you cannot develop the ability to be mindful. Because this mental hindrance hinder your mind from entering this meditative state. So you need to develop skillful means to anchor the mind. You do. There's an object of meditation is for you to anchor the mind. Then after that, stabilize it. That's it. There is no other purpose. It's not meditation at all. It's just to anchor the mind. Because you're supposed to be mindful of the object of meditation. When you are mindful, you don't think. But the problem with people is they cannot be mindful of walking. They cannot. Of standing. Turning, bending, stretching. Everything you do, you're supposed to be aware. Aware means no thought. Just body and mind move as one. Aware, aware. Then when you can be just with the moment and just aware, aware, aware. Even the sense experience, the contact, just aware, aware. Finish. Let it be. Let it pass. When the mindfulness stabilizes, when your mind is in sati, everything will happen. Now, that is the real meditation. When your mind is in sati, every moment of hearing is in sati. Smell, taste, seeing, activity or whatever. That's why the specific phenomenal awareness will arise. All your seeing will be in sati. Yeah. That phenomenon of seeing. It's just the awareness. And you follow the phenomena. That's it. That whatever contact through the mind at any of the sense organ, it's just aware. Finish. But if aware, then the sankhara come up, you still don't know. You are not cultivating. You are lost in thought. Your habitual tendency, your heedless thinking is always there. You go and check. All this, you can see. That's why if you can't be aware in the midst of life, the heedless thinking will be there. And you try your very best to discipline yourself to be peaceful, actually, not to be mindful. Because you don't understand what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is just to relax and be with the moment. You just do. Don't try to know. When it arises, the form and mind will know. That's all you have to do. Like training yourself to ride a bicycle or whatever. When you are already skillful, no thought one. You can execute those movements without thought one. Because you are already skillful, trained. So all this training is to develop sati initially. And when sati has become a part of you, then your meditation starts. Otherwise, I find those thought based on actually wasting time. You go and develop a lot of calmness, peacefulness. You are seeking peace. And you think that is meditation. Then every time you go for retreat, you come out, you go back to square one. Then you go in again, then you come out, you go to back to square one. Well, you cannot develop mindfulness in the midst of life. Of course, that calmness, that peacefulness can make you feel good. So later on, when you go back to society, every time you got problem, you go and sit. Understand? then you become more calm, more peaceful, which is also useful. But then this mindfulness, if it's not developed and stabilized, your mind cannot be in the meditative state most of the time, and you cannot be heedful. That's why the Buddha very clearly explained, the heedless are as if dead. Only the heedful, they will never die. That's why heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Nothing else free you except heedfulness. When you are heedful, you are ever mindful, cultivating, contemplating, reflecting. Then your mind is most of the time on Dhamma, the four noble truths, the three turning, the essential Dhamma. So this is what the Buddha said, things that are fit for attention, you pay attention. Means through mindfulness, you attend to it. And what other thing that is fit for attention? The four noble truths, the essential Dhamma, and its three turning. If you deviate from all this, it will lead to heedlessness. That's why all the desire, the craving, all this come from your wrong thought. Your sorrow, lamentation, your depression, all come from your wrong thought. Things that are unfit for attention, you pay attention. Your anger, your envy, your jealousy, how you perceive people, how these people like disturb you, cause you to be unhappy. You point finger outside. And all the time, you are dwelling on wrong thought. And what are wrong thought? Thought that condition your fear, your unhappiness, your sorrow, your lamentation, your like and your dislike, your pleasant and your unpleasant. And this is mindfulness, this is meditation. When you are aware that you are paying attention to things that are unfit for attention, you're supposed to arise a four right effort to abandon it. Then in future to prevent it from arising. Then only your cultivation can move on. If you can't even be aware of your wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, there is no way you can develop the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. So now with this sharing, it will help you to understand, so that you understand what the focus is. So what they taught is good, because the first thing is to understand Pariyatti, stage one Dhamma, means learning of the teaching. That's why all these that I explain are the learning of the teaching. Not the method and the technique. Those are not important. If you don't have the understanding, you go and cling to the method, the technique and the instruction. Oh, what Na Long teach me this. I must maintain this type of practice. Then you will not progress. That one is to cater for international yogi who are there. And they conduct it because they want to train you all simultaneously, so that everybody follow the same routine, because they believe this is the best. And if you understand, then you will know how to fit in. It's not a problem at all. Then you don't go and compare. Oh, why what Na Long like that? I go to other place, the focus is different. Then I go to, you got all your other retreat and all those things. But you cannot compare like that, because every place is different, just like every individual is different. They are just the way they are. Condition like that, things will be like that. Understanding like that, they will teach like that. But when you have the understanding, you know how to fit in. You will know what they are trying to teach you. Then if you have the experience and the understanding, you can help many others who are there. Then you can tell them, relax, don't be so serious. You are too tense. Then have a happy mind. There is another monk in Thailand, very good, Achan. Yeah, that one laugh a lot one. They call him the Laughing Buddha. What's her name? What is his name already? Chai Chai Di Chap Sai Bai. He always say good mind, happy mind. Achan Ganha. Achan Ganha. Achan Ganha. He say as long as you maintain joy and happiness, you are meditating. Your mind must be good, he said. No. Chai Di Chai Sabai, Sabai, he always said Sabai. And his metta is very strong, very powerful. When he put his hand at the Tan Tien and relate the metta to you, it's so strong. I can feel, I'm very sensitive. So I pay respect to him. He full of joy, he liked me. Because I reported certain things he knew. He doesn't know English. So that time the disciple was trying to translate. Then after I explained, he tell the disciple, yeah, he say, good, good, good. He said, in Thai, I forgot what's the name already. Yeah. He said, yeah, yeah, yeah. He understand what I was doing, no, that time. No. That was the early day of my practice. I told him, I can go into the Anapanasati. I can silence my mind. Because I like to meditate middle of the night last time. Then when I was in this continuous mindfulness, I told him, I can shut down the hearing consciousness. I happen to know about it by accident. Because that time, SS2, you know, they got a lot of this motto. Middle of the night, you know, 2, 3 a.m., they race, you know, before they put in the bump. So, when I was meditating, then I know all this sound. Then when this sound arise, I continue to meditate. Then all of a sudden, I realized I went into this absorption. The sense door or hearing consciousness shut off now. Completely shut off. I was in full awareness. Then, inside that silent shut off, I just release it out because I want to find out. The moment I release, the motor sound was still there, so loud. Then I went into the continuous mindfulness again. Then it shut off again. Then I know how people went into absorption or jhana, they can shut off their sense door. That's why they can abide within. But that is samatha, understand? No? That is concentration. Even continuous mindfulness can lead to energy field. That's how I was trapped in the early years. Because I went into continuous mindfulness. And I went into all this absorption. Even though I went into some of the formless state. Because it just come naturally for me to understand, to see. Then when I described that to him, he knew, no. He said, yeah, satu, satu. He said, very good for you. Then after that, he say certain Thai word, but I think the disciple don't know how to translate. Then I told him about the daily mindfulness. He also say, very good, very good. He said, then he always repeat, chai di chai sabai, sabai, sabai. And he's full of metta, full of love. That's why this monk is very, very beautiful. And he is the nephew of one of the famous monk, I think Achan Cha, if I'm not wrong. Achan Cha's nephew, isn't it? If I'm not wrong. Either Achan Cha or this, the one in near the Wat Nah Long, you got this, the monk that passed away at the age of 90 something. Long Po, what? The very famous one, that's a. Oh no, after Achan Man. No, before Mahabodhwa, there's another Achan. What? I used to go and visit Laos border one. Long Po Thet. Long Po Thet. Long Po Thet. Long Po Thet. He's a very good. Long Po Thet one is another one. The monk that took us there, the Prakhu, that one is the nephew of Long Po Thet. So this one must be Achan Cha's nephew, the Achan Ganha. So some of these monks, they are beautiful. They teach differently. What I want you to understand is, it doesn't mean they teach differently. They are not teaching you the Dhamma. Oh, they are still teaching you the Dhamma. But there are many approach to Dhamma, how to train your mind, to have the relaxed state of mind, happy state of mind, peaceful state of mind, calm state of mind, the wholesome state of mind. That is what meditation is all about. Okay, good. Anything else, Amy? Another 7 minutes only.
What I want to share is what? During closing ceremony, Longpo Thongphai was telling this very nicely. He said, in the closing ceremony, you open your heart. Open your heart to share whatever you want to share.
Yeah.
And then in the opening ceremony, you close your heart.
Close
your heart means close your heart from three evil roots. So during that he talked like that, I was so happy. I said, wow, very profound. In the closing ceremony, you open your heart. You open your heart means you share whatever you want to share, and then you go home with an open heart,
happy mind.
So I forgot to share is during the beginning, the opening ceremony, he tells us, I can't remember, it's told by the teacher monk or by Long Po Tong Pai, speak less, think less, eat less. These three things in the beginning, the first day, second day, like that.
It will happen by itself. It will happen by itself. But sometimes you have to be thoughtful. These are guidelines, anasana guidelines. But when you do your meditation, when you are able to connect to your nature, sometimes initially your body needs food. You become very hungry. You have to eat. That's why you have to understand your body. But the natural tendency is, after you have developed the meditation and the understanding, finally, you will really talk less. Especially you are in the training that time. I remember during the early days when I trained, 1989, when I go for retreat or what, I hardly talk. Then that retreat, the 5 days on Cameron Highland, I told you the second day the cessation happened, I hardly talked. I was alone for the rest of the 3-4 days after that. And I see somebody, I just silent and acknowledge. No word come out. And because of that, all the sankhara says, slow down until, like throughout the day, I got no talk. No talk. Just fully aware, mindful. That's why you will, like Amy said, talk less. Think less is automatic one. Yeah, the sankhara just cannot arise. Or like, no need to arise. You are just within that silence, just aware. It only arise when you want to use talk, when you want to speak, when you want to communicate. Otherwise, you just maintain silent, aware. But this is in the formal meditation, in a retreat setting. But when you come out to society, you have to communicate. Otherwise, people will think you're very weird. Something wrong with you. But you will know one. When it's time to silent, you will be silent. Less thought is a very good indication of progress. Avijja paccaya sankhara, the first two links, dependent on ignorant mental activity, thinking arise. If you have straightened your view, developed the correct meditation, the understanding, you will have less avijja. Then less avijja, less thinking. It's a natural response, tendency. So that's why you will think less. Not to say you think less. The thought will slow down. There will be less thought. That's why speak less, think less, eat less. Like for the last don't know how many years, I most of the time not hungry. I don't need food for the last many years. Even you got very good food, I can't take much. I take a little bit. Well, my body don't need now. Not like last time. Last time, during the early day when I need food, I just take. My wife will know. Sometimes I have to go for supper, but I need that food. Then later on, when I don't need food, the body is different. Yeah. It doesn't need the food anymore. So all these are very relevant advice when you understand. Very good. Thank you so much, Amy. Bless and rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So you can get to understand many things. When people share, like Amy say, open your heart. Means you are willing to share. Share your understanding. Then from your understanding, the goodness will arise, the wholesomeness will arise. Then maintain good mind. That's why that word from Ajahn Gandha is very good. Chai di, chai sabai, sabai. Chai is mind. Di is good, good mind. Chai di. Then chai sabai, sabai, sabai. Means sabai means really good mind. Very, very good mind. So when you can have that mind state, every moment you are happy, How can you have evil root? You understand? Every moment also you rejoice. You have this joy inside you. then your negative thought, negative thinking, emotion all cease to be. So maintain that joy, that happiness, that understanding, to see things as they are, to accept people for what they are. Then your mind become different. That's why the approach to meditation can be many times. Oh, sign, 6 o'clock. Yeah? I have to end. Huh? So thank you so much for listening. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we will now share Mary and transform Mary with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva cirang rakantu loka sasana itta wata caamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you all can pay respect to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the other worthy ones. Then we end.